Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Jim, we start with a really delicious good martini out of the Bernie Sanders campaign. We talked yesterday with Ian about how the Bernie campaign was not at all happy that the Associated Press had declared Hillary the de facto nominee, the presumptive nominee, following its latest delegate tally just hours before the polls opened and the final primary contest on Tuesday. Hillary Clinton did quite well in most of those primaries. Bernie got a couple, but none of the big stakes with the delegates in New Jersey or California. Still, when he finally got around to addressing his supporters in the middle of the night, here's what he had to say.
We are going to fight hard to win the primary in Washington, D.C., and then we take our fight for social, economic, racial, and environmental justice to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I am pretty good in arithmetic, and I know that the fight in front of us is a very, very steep fight. But we will continue to fight for every vote and every delegate we can get.
So, Jim, on a night when Hillary Clinton was talking about her wonderfully historic moment and talking about the history of women in politics and women voting all the way back to Seneca Falls, Bernie Sanders, with a giant bucket of cold water, as he promises to fight on not only to Washington, D.C., but to fight hard at the convention, too.
You know, Greg, I was struck this morning when the New York Times really on the front page had a really rough piece on Bernie Sanders saying he had really snubbed Hillary Clinton and he had refused to pay tribute to history. And you just kind of wait. You could hear that mansplaining laments and male privilege arguments going on. I'd like all these folks to explain to me how Bernie Sanders is supposed to do that. He's supposed to say congratulations to Hillary Clinton on her historic nomination and not concede the race. Unless he comes out to say, I salute her. It's a enormous victory. She should feel very proud. And now we're going to persuade the superdelegates to take it from her. You can't go out and do that. It's not going to work. So his argument has to be that, no, she hasn't really won it yet. It's not official until the superdelegates vote. It's not official until Philadelphia. And he's going to fight to the end. And I don't really see why he should give it up if he feels like he's a leader of a movement. Like what is he supposed to sit and wait around until, 2024? And run after her second term? You know, the guy's on the clock here. He doesn't have a lot of time to wait.
He'd be 82 at that point. The voters seem to love the old people this time around, but I'm not sure they'd want an octogenarian. But maybe that'll be their moment. Who knows in 2024. On to the second good martini now, Jim. And this is one that might split our listeners a little bit. But most grassroots conservatives are also pretty darn happy about a primary that happened in North Carolina on Tuesday night. Due to redistricting, two incumbent House Republicans ended up running against one another, George Holding and Renee Elmers. Elmers was a 2010 Tea Party darling, scored an upset over Democrat Bob Etheridge after Etheridge had manhandled a reporter on the street, on video, mind you. Then she became pretty cozy with House leadership. She blocked, essentially, a vote on a 20-week abortion ban that was on the same day as the March for Life, which really riled the pro-life movement. She also turned out to be pretty squishy on immigration, including the president's unilateral move on immigration. George Holding beats her 2-1. Most grassroots conservatives not unhappy at all to see Renee Elmers headed for the exits.
She's a squish in immigration, and naturally Donald Trump endorsed her. indicating that the details are just really not a big deal to Donald. So wherever you are in the spectrum, you can probably find some reason to cheer the departure of Renee Elmers. As much as a Trump critic would like to gloat, I should point out that the Trump endorsement was probably not the decisive factor. First and foremost, you got to point out the redrawn district lines and that this was not much of her old district, which, makes things a little tougher if you introduce yourself to new voters. But I think even then, she would have had a better shot if she had not alienated pro-life groups. Back in January 2015, the National Right to Life said no lawmaker has done more harm to pro-life legislation while claiming to be pro-life than Renee Elmers. Susan B. Anthony List was sending folks down to that district to work in the primary to work against her. She had made, enemies. And when you don't dance with the one that brung you, so to speak, when you don't have the base and the allies who you were traditionally having, it's very hard to replace that. And she tried to do it with Trump. She endorsed Trump early. Trump recorded the robocalls for her. He did his part. But ended up with 20-some% of the vote in a three-way primary. This was a bad outcome for her, and I think a lot of Republicans who are feeling nervous about November, this sends a pretty clear signal that you can't count on Trump's voters. Kind of the one other kind of parallel to draw here. So in 2008, Greg, we saw, Obama win by a huge margin, and the Democrats think, oh, we have this new motivated base, we're going to win forever. And then they didn't show up for John Corzine, they didn't show up for Cree Deeds, they didn't show up in the midterms. The Trump voters may be kind of this similar parallel to the Obama voters, that if their guy's not on the ballot, they're not going to come out and vote. They don't pay attention to politics and aren't as interested in helping Trump's allies as they are about Trump. And that's got to leave a lot of pro-Trump Republicans, members of Congress, rare as they are, sweating.
Yeah, now that's a good omen for them, or a good warning for them, I should say, a bad omen for them. Let's move on to the crazy martini now. And Ian and I talked yesterday about House Speaker Paul Ryan calling Trump's statement that Judge Curiel couldn't be fair in the Trump University case because he's a Mexican to be racist. And then Jeffrey Lord, a Trump supporter over on CNN, calling Ryan a racist. And we'll see how many degrees of racist separation we can get here. Jim, but let's play the Ryan cut again, because you've lurched to another important takeaway from this story. Here's what Ryan said on Tuesday.
Claiming a person can't do their job because of their race is sort of like the textbook definition of a racist comment. I think that should be absolutely disavowed. It's absolutely unacceptable. But do I believe that Hillary Clinton is the answer? No, I do not. Do I believe that Hillary Clinton is going to be the answer to solving these problems? I do not. I believe that we have more common ground on the policy issues of the day, and we have more likelihood of getting our policies enacted with him than we do with her.
So Ryan's got to be horrified by this, not only by what the nominee of his party is saying, but the fact that it's constantly detracting from the ideas agenda that Ryan wants to do. But Jim, as you point out, the Republicans are in a horrific position if you're going, yeah, that's totally racist, but yeah, vote for him anyway.
You want to talk about a circumstance we're going about as bad as it possibly could. Donald Trump is not shooting people on Fifth Avenue yet. But that's about all that's gone right, because, when Ryan has to say things like this, and Mitch McConnell has to say, I want to see him stop attacking minority groups, you could say these are the sorts of comments that will show up in a Hillary Clinton ad, or whether they even need to at this point, because that generates news. And, you'll say, oh, well, Republicans shouldn't attack the nominee. Well, Donald Trump has got to stop putting them in this situation. It's kind of ridiculous. Yesterday I was on CNN, and poor Lee Zeldin, this Republican congressman from Long Island, just got whacked around like a pinata because he wanted to say, well, I don't support these statements. I really think they're bad and Trump shouldn't say them, but I'm still supporting them. And you eventually get questions like, well, is it okay to be a little bit racist? It's a racist statement, but you still have to vote for him. Isn't it, you're going to tie yourself into knots trying to make that argument. Trump has got to get better. And if he doesn't, you're starting to see this movement, this push to say, look, maybe we got to reconsider this at the convention, because he's going to drag down the entire party. And you got to figure at a moment like this, Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell have to be sitting there thinking, if this guy's going to really endanger our majorities like this, why are we going forward with this? So maybe that'll be the silver lining that comes out of this, is that the return to the idea of the convention fight, because how can you run when your candidate keeps giving you one new awkward racial controversy after another?
Property owners in Cleveland and Philadelphia, make sure those insurance policies are up to date. Amazing. Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.